writing out concepts is an absolute superpower for making change happen. It's hard. This is not easy medicine that we're talking about here. This is a subtle and difficult transition. One of the nice things about making this transition is you don't have to go all in.
Welcome to Your Intended Message, the perfect place for leaders and promising professionals who want to convey the intended message for greater success. Every week, we interview experts who address the challenges and best practices to deliver your message effectively. That might be one-to-one, one-to-few, or one-to-many. And perhaps the most important conversation, one-to-self. I'm your host, George Torok. My guest today is John Rossman. Here's three facts that I think you should know about him. One, he is an early Amazon executive that launched the marketplace business in 2002. Two, he's author of The Amazon Way, Think Like Amazon, and his latest book, Big Bet Leadership. And the third fact is that usually he's joined by his French bulldog, Bossman Rossman. We know who the boss is. John Rossman, welcome to Your Intended Message.
George, thank you for having me. Great to be here. It's been great getting to know you. So thank you.
Delighted to be talking with you and learning from the pivotal stage during the growth of Amazon, the lessons that you've taken away from that experience while it was someone else's money who was being risked. So that's a great, fabulous success story, great learning experience.
Well, yeah, I would say to some degree other people's money, but to some degree we all had a lot at stake there because of the way the compensation structure at Amazon was structured. It was heavily tilted, especially as a senior person, heavily tilted towards options and not towards salary. So we did have a lot personally at stake relative to the success of these launches and growth.
And that kind of setup would naturally encourage an ownership type mentality.
In fact, ownership is one of the leadership principles from Amazon, and compensation is just one way to instill that leadership principle. But the spirit or the goal of what you're trying to do is to get everybody to think long-term versus just short-term. You do need short-term results, but you want to make sure you have long-term results thinking, and that you never sacrifice long-term enterprise value to achieve short-term things. And so those were the things that leadership principle was trying to accomplish. And incentive systems and compensation and the way you use metrics and the way you do reviews plays a big role into the type of culture that you build.
And that focus on the long-term is far more productive versus the style where it's, oh, this quarter, we've got to make this quarter look good.
I think you can have different points of view on that and everything. And I respect, I've done a bunch of restructuring work since my time at Amazon. And when you're in a crisis situation, it is about the short term, right? And so I think it depends upon the situation, depends upon the ownership structure, depends upon the timing and the mission. But I agree with the thesis, which is over time, long-term thinking, investment into new capabilities, new use cases, into the customer relationship and the lifetime customer value does tend to breed a very durable company. And that's the core work I do with my clients. You know, you can call that innovation, new incubation, business management, digital transformation. Those are all the things that I work with my clients on.
And there's no question Amazon is an example of innovation. They were just a bookstore when they started, selling books online. Who thought that that could have gone anywhere?
Yeah, you know, when I was there early 2002, 90% of the business was books, music, video, all mostly first party. So Amazon acquired the inventory and sold the inventory. The business that I helped launch, the marketplace business, we rapidly expanded into 14 new categories over 2 years, and it was all done through third parties actually being the seller of record and doing the fulfillment at that point. And so that was a big switch in model, but we had some very different points of view than the king at that point of the marketplace business, which was eBay. And we really started from a point of view of building a trusted customer experience. And we can talk more about this, but a trusted customer experience that was very different than eBay's perspective on that. And I think all the hard things we did to accomplish that trusted customer experience is really what has led to the marketplace being one of the dreamy businesses of Amazon. It's over 60% of all units shipped and sold are marketplace units today. And I think we really built something with the right philosophy, with the right mission.
And I'd like to explore the concept of the trusted relationship with the customers. And I can't help but mention or think that, when was the last time I ordered something from Amazon? Was it
this
just
morning?
A couple days ago, or was it last week?
Mine was this morning, so.
And I can't even remember. Yes, I remember when I used to be on eBay regularly. I can't remember the last time I was on eBay. Why would you go there?
Unless you're looking for car parts or Beanie Babies, you really don't go to eBay, right?
Yes.
They had three times the size of Amazon at that point. They had all the momentum. And I think they really just didn't look at how extensible kind of that one, it essentially is one use case, which is I want to bid for something and I'm okay with waiting for a while and have a little bit of a Wild West experience in the middle. They didn't really push past that.
So let's take a look at Amazon going through change building. When you came along, let's in particular look at the communication channels within the company and then naturally with the customers. How did that work? How did we build trust and how did you keep the communication open?
I think the work I do is I work with leaders and companies on innovating, how to do new things. And there's not one thing you need to do well in order to innovate, but communication, I believe, is one of the oftentimes forgotten or underplayed elements of what makes successful innovation or transformation. Amazon has this culture of memo writing. And what we would do is we would write out any new proposal, any problematic situation, any new idea we wanted to do, we would write out and debate in memos. It takes both the writing and the debating to make these things work. And so Amazon, they call that approach working backwards. So starting with the customer, starting with the outcome that you want and working backwards. And a lot of the work that I've done since Amazon has been taking that philosophy and molding it and mixing it and adapting it into the client's situation. So I have a new book coming out in February of 2024 called Big Bet Leadership. Part of the underpinnings of Big Bet Leadership is about thinking in outcomes and using memos to help articulate what we believe the problem is that we are solving, what we believe the future state is that we are going to create, what the couple of critical assumptions or operating capabilities are that are doing that, and then debating those. That is essential communication within a core team that has to decide, is this the right innovation? Is this the right idea? Is this the right big bet for us to do? And so that Amazon philosophy, so back to 2002, the launch of the marketplace, I wrote the future press release for the marketplace business. There was one line in it that made all the difference. And that line was, a third party should be able to register, sell an item, fulfill an order, and delight a customer as though Amazon, the retailer, had done it without talking to anybody in the middle of the night, right? So that one simple sentence actually imposed a tremendous amount of obligation on Amazon to create this great third-party selling service that allowed them to sell to a customer in a trusted manner, but it had to be completely self-service. And so that line communicated to everybody within Amazon corporate was key to like, well, this is the mission. We are launching this marketplace. This is the experience we needed. We called it a future press release memo. It wasn't the only memo that we wrote, but it was an essential one. And then just to do self-service registration, there was over 20 teams that played a role in that registration pipeline. None of them reported to me. And every week I'd go do my check-in, like, hey, how's your progress on self-service registration going? And they go, well, John, I'm sorry, you know, something's come up, other priorities. I'd say, hey, no problem. Come on up to me to the ST meeting with Bezos this week, and together we'll explain why a third-party seller won't be able to register in the middle of the night. Guess what would happen, George? All of a sudden, like, okay, we'll figure out how to get done. It was a friendly but effective way of driving change across a complex organization with lots of things going on, conflicting priorities, but it allowed me as a leader to get things done without always escalating, right? Without slowing down, keeping the pace high. So that was an essential part. That's a great example of how communication with empowering leaders allows you to make change happen.
John, you mentioned that new ideas are put into memos and are debated in memos. And what did you find were the key benefits of that approach?
There's so many memos. There's a bunch of research on why writing memo leads to better thinking. And we reference that research in Big Bet Leadership. But the benefits of writing out memos are, first of all, it puts you in this thoughtful state of mind. Instead of being in this interrupt-driven approach, it actually forces you to sit down, find a quiet space, and actually write out what is the problem I am trying to solve and what do I propose to do about it. Then if you bring others into this memo writing process, you're able to better, sometimes in a synchronous way, meaning together, sometimes in an asynchronous way, them reviewing and contributing to the memo, you're able to get their contribution, their questions to inch this concept forward and capturing all the detail. It's very difficult to capture the subtle details or subtle issues or subtle differences of what you're proposing or what you're going to do when you're just talking about it, when you're not capturing it memo. So that's one benefit, is we think through them so much better. Secondly, is it leads to much better debate. So if we start a meeting with reviewing and reading the memo, and then we're debating the memo, it relies much less on the presentation skills or the personality of the presenter. It's much more focused on the topic, and it invites in more critical feedback and letting an environment to punish these ideas, to punch them, to persecute them early. That's testing. That is literally testing of this concept. But our fragile cultures, you know, are very sensitive to that. And especially if somebody is presenting the idea, well, then it's really difficult for me to be critical of that idea. But if it's written out a memo and, hey, we're just reviewing the memo, it makes it easier for somebody to be critical. That's them doing their job as being critical. Another benefit is, say, in 3 months, you want to go back and audit. Well, what did we learn? Did we accomplish what we said we're going to do? You had a much better audit trail to be able to go back. That helps create accountable organizations doing that. And there's more benefits than that. They're easier to pass on to other people that couldn't make your key meetings or that weren't involved, get them up to speed, all sorts of documentation benefits. And so writing out concepts is an absolute superpower for making change happen. It's hard. This is not easy medicine that we're talking about here. This is a subtle and difficult transition. One of the nice things about making this transition is you don't have to go all in. You can do it just for yourself. You can do it just for your team. You can do it for this project, not for everything. You don't have to go all in at the beginning, but it is a change of pace. And if you give it time, if you're patient, give it 6 months or a year, the writing and debating skills come a long way.
Did you have to send them to training to write better? Because a lot of us don't write well.
Great question. We didn't, but I do with my clients. In fact, I teach some classes. You can find them at Maven. I teach classes about this thinking, writing, debating process and everything at Maven. And you can find it at my website too. And so there is training available to do this. And training is very helpful. But it does take the essential element of senior leadership, not just tacitly saying, okay, I'll let this go on, but them actually engaging in the process and participating as like, I'm just somebody in the room debating this topic versus you're presenting to me. That creates a very different dynamic also. And it's a real opportunity for a senior leader to get down a level, demonstrate their expertise, work with their team on a different style and a different element versus just this executive presentation style that just dominates big enterprises. And the benefits, again, like there's so many benefits that come out of that.
By putting the ideas in memos, it helps depersonalize the conversation, because if I'm presenting and you're hitting me with questions or objections, I'll take it personally. You're attacking me, but where you put it on paper, now we're dealing with the idea, the concept, not the individual.
And again, you want to make it clear to everybody, the job of this meeting is to beat this idea up, right? It's just to make it better. If it withstands pressure testing, then it's ready. Well, you don't do that by complimenting the idea. You do that by asking like the critical questions about it. And especially, well, why this idea versus other ideas? And so one of the things I do when I work with clients is you never want to have just a portfolio of one idea. You want to have a portfolio of several ideas. And even if it is just one big idea, have subtle variations of that same idea so that you're actually creating some contrast and having that contrast. So in Big Bet Leadership, we have this concept called the three futures memo. And it's a way of taking one proposal and creating three subtle but real options around it, and then debating those options. And that allows senior people to truly voice their concerns about a proposal, to understand the subtle things that they are agreeing to or not agreeing to, and creates a much better buy-in approach than just somebody's presenting, well, here's my plan. That's an unfair question in so many cases, right? That person knows so much than the people they're presenting to. It's proposed as a finished product. There's no other alternatives. So it's really hard to propose an alternative because you're coming with, you know, no alternative created, versus if you were to create three subtle versions of this one idea and write those out, two-page memo, no more, and then open for debate. That's creating the environment that actually solicits that type of critical feedback.
Three versions of the outcome. Was it encouraged or was it allowed that at least one of them could be a little crazy?
They could all be crazy, George. It depends on the scope of innovation. But the key thing is that they all have to be realistic options. And so if one of the options isn't realistic, well, then that's not really an option, right? And so they have to be viable options to do this three futures memo approach.
Viable based on current technology or technology that could happen down the road?
Situational. Most of the time you're talking about what I would call kind of, you know, first horizon or second horizon type innovation. So it's fairly proven technology. Now you may have technical risks that are a key part of what needs to be tested really early. And oftentimes those risks are either a scalability risk, a cost risk, or an adoption risk for a customer, but the essential technology is in play.
With the memos, did that make your meetings shorter and more productive?
It wasn't that the meetings were shorter, they were harder in a lot of ways, meaning because everybody is always thinking in those meetings. And so versus most meetings, 90% of the team, the meeting room is tuned out. And so it's actually more demanding. What you find is that you make more forward progress. You don't redo meetings time and time again, and you have fewer meetings. It's the best way. One of the things I do with my clients oftentimes is really focus on meeting hygiene and cutting out 50% of all meetings, truly understanding what's the purpose of each meeting, what's conversion, what's the goal of the meeting, who's the owner of the meeting, what's the pre-work that has to go out, what's the post-work that has to come out, who needs to be there, what's the preparation needed, all of that. And if you actually take the time to have better meeting hygiene, you need far fewer of them, and they're more productive, more energetic. And that creates the time to do this more thoughtful work of actually writing out your concepts.
Meeting hygiene. I like the concept. And you're right. When we're in meetings, we're not thinking much. Whereas if we had the opportunity to write a memo or read a memo, we can then think on our own time, and we're more likely to go deeper versus in a meeting reacting.
So one of the killer habits you can do with these memos is send them out a day or two early. And if you can actually get people to read them, then what are you doing about it? Well, your subconscious mind is thinking about it. You're going to come into that meeting so much better prepared because you've digested it, right? There's a power to, you know, let me sleep on it, right? Like, why is that a good response to big decisions? Because you actually are making progress thinking about something versus just having to react to it at the moment. And so that's one of the things you can do much better with a memo is send it out ahead of time, actually get your audience thinking about it. They're going to come in, and the job to be done is to make big decisions on this situation. You're equipping them to make better decisions.
And how is that philosophy, that practice of the memo writing, how is that kind of communication transferred into how you deal with your clients? And I suppose you have clients and suppliers. How do you keep those communication channels going? Are you sending them memos?
You absolutely can include partners and vendors in this. I would encourage that, especially like in an innovation system, bring in customers, bring in partners, bring in providers to participate appropriately in bringing in those ideas. And, you know, the whole concept of open innovation, co-innovation is in essence, you know, doing that from a community standpoint, not just staying in your siloed points of view and your siloed communication and your siloed enterprise. There's a lot of power of bringing in external agents into your conversations, including your ecosystem.
Jeff Bezos, how would you summarize his communication styles?
Jeff was a great thinker, and he was direct, and he always wanted to actually like push the thinking bigger and harder. And so one of the Amazon's leadership principles is about thinking big, and that it's our job to look around corners and to think big on behalf of our customers. And so it was a thrill because he was at his best when you were having these discussions and you were debating what the future could be, and you were talking about the different potential elements there were and the subtle things that would have to go on. And then the other thing that Jeff did was he would always like, well, what's the underlying principles in how we're making this decision, right? Like, how would I apply this framework to other situations? And so that's the thinking about how we're thinking is the most important thinking we do. And that's where the Amazon leadership principles come from, is that underlying approach of, hey, we want to capture how we prioritize things, how we think things through, how we work together. That's really what a leader is. And so these Amazon leadership principles, not that they're the right thing for any other company, but looking, studying them and understanding the depth, the breadth, the mechanisms that are behind them. Mechanisms are the way that we put this principle into practice. Any company can benefit from slowing down and thinking about, well, how do we make decisions? How do we hold each other accountable? What do we prioritize? And that's why the Amazon Way, you know, it's been translated into 13 languages. I've sold over 200,000 copies of that book. It's not about Amazon. It's about what you can take from a company like Amazon that created these principles that definitely helped create the baseline for that culture.
So what I'm hearing is that we don't have to adopt the Amazon Way, but we can learn from how it came about.
That's profound in how you said that. So yes, that's exactly the point. Now, if you want to evaluate or emulate one or more of their principles, like, great, I've had lots of clients do that and everything. But the first and big value is slowing down and thinking about what culture do we truly want and how do we create, is it a short-term culture or a long-term culture? Like, that's part of kind of getting on page there.
John, your next book coming out, Big Bet Leadership, we believe it's going to launch in February 24. Who's that for and what will they get from that?
Yeah, so the full title is Big Bet Leadership, Your Transformation Playbook for Winning in the Hyper-Digital Era. So big bets are any of these digital transformations, innovation programs, a lot of M&A, other risky business strategies that we do. It's a big bet because it has the potential, it has the promise of having big impact in our business, but we know that there's material risk in it actually working. And so it's not a methodology. We address the key failure points of why these big transformations fail, and then a philosophy and a tactic in order to address it. I have a co-author, Kevin McCaffrey. Kevin was my client at T-Mobile. He ran strategy there. We stood up a new business incubation. We innovated on a lot of the Amazon working backwards memo techniques into an approach that worked for an enterprise that didn't have that background, right? And so we added on top of it. But, you know, the book, it's a nice storyline. We didn't try to overdo the prescription that's in the book. Purchase of the book comes with access to a set of tools and prompts and videos to complement the book. And it will be out February 27th of 2024.
And in the meantime, I believe you have an offer for people.
Yeah. So here's the offer. Go to bigbetleadership.com, enter in your email address and your Kindle email address, and I'll send you a Kindle version of the book when it releases late February of next year. And what I ask is please write a customer review.
A reasonable ask, a wonderful offer. And you can find that link in the description below. John, as we prepare to wrap up, if you could sit down with a business leader and you can offer them one, two, or three pieces of advice on how they can take their business through a transformation, much like Amazon did, what would that be?
Well, what a great question. The one thing that always astounds me, so I do a lot of keynote speaking and I'll ask an audience, I'll go, who here believes that innovation and new business incubation is critical for your company over the next 5 to 10 years? Everyone will raise their hand. Then I'll ask, who has an actual system, a process, a playbook for how to do that? And rarely does anybody have their hand up. And so it's that fundamental disconnect of we know we need to innovate, grow new use cases, new customers, new capabilities, but we don't actually put a system behind it. And so that would be the question that I would ask a leader is, how critical is new growth to you? And what is your playbook for winning at doing that? And that's where the conversation would start.
And valuable advice. And I can think of so many people who want to do something, but they don't have the playbook. And it starts with the playbook. powerful advice. My guest today is John Rossman, reminding you that you start with the outcome and then you work backwards.
If you like what you heard, tell your friends and post your 5-star review on Apple Podcasts, because that helps more listeners find us. Come back every week for more practical insights to help you deliver your intended message. I'm your host, George Torok.